Money Psychology. Money Psychology.
Every time you reach for your wallet, check your bank balance, or make a financial decision, you're not just dealing with money. You're reliving every money lesson, fear, and belief you absorbed before you were old enough to understand what any of it meant. I'm Elliot Graves, and this is Money Psychology, where we explore how your earliest financial experiences created the money mindset that controls your financial life today. Welcome to Money Psychology. Money Psychology. How much of your financial blueprint was written not by you, but by the journey your family took to get here? What if your relationship with money, every decision to save, to spend, to invest, is an echo of a past you never even lived? That question is, it's everything for this topic. It really hits home for me. I often see in my own family how financial habits, things we do without even thinking, are direct legacies of my parents' experience of leaving their home country. It's this deep-seated need for stability, a kind of financial defensiveness that's been passed down.
Right.
And for me, it's watching my friends, children of immigrants, navigate this incredible pressure. The pressure to validate their parents' sacrifices through financial success. It creates this constant, unspoken tension around every career choice, every major purchase. It's not just about money. It's about honoring a legacy.
Exactly.
And that's the core of what we're exploring today in our episode, The Financial Mirage, Decoding the Impact of Immigration on Money Behavior. We're pulling back the curtain on the unique financial psychology that gets forged in the crucible of immigration. This isn't just about budgeting in a new country. We're going to be delving into invisible scripts, the cultural clashes, and the powerful emotional currents that shape how immigrant families think, feel, and act with their money. It's a journey that profoundly reshapes one's entire financial identity, and we can't wait to unpack it with you. And that reshaping of identity, it starts with something you mentioned earlier, that defensiveness. For my parents, it wasn't just about saving money, it was about building a fortress. Every financial decision was another brick in a wall against the uncertainty that forced them to leave their home in the first place. A fortress. That's a powerful way to put it. So it's not just loss aversion in the classic economic sense, it's existential. It's a defense against history repeating itself.
Yes.
And it creates these fascinating paradoxes. For instance, a deep, deep distrust of anything that wasn't tangible. You could have the world's best performing stock, but to them, it was just paper. It was an idea. But a piece of property, a small business, even if it wasn't wildly profitable, that was real. You could stand on it. You could open the door in the morning. You could stand on it. Exactly. It couldn't just vanish overnight in a market crash that some person in a suit on television was trying to explain. It was this almost primal need for things that couldn't be easily taken away.
Did that create friction for you, growing up?
When you started learning about modern financial tools, like investing for retirement in, a 401k or mutual funds?
Oh, immense friction.
The conversations were circular. Me trying to explain compound interest, and them looking at me like I was describing a magic trick. To them, putting money into something you couldn't physically touch was one step away from gambling it on a horse race.
Because the goal isn't growth, it's preservation.
The primary directive is don't lose the ground we've gained. And that's a completely different operating system from the typical American financial advice, which is all about growth, leverage, and a certain level of comfort with abstract risk.
A comfort they just never had the luxury of developing.
Their risk was leaving everything behind. After a risk that big, the appetite for any more, it just shrinks. It has to.
Which is so interesting because that defensiveness, that don't lose mentality, runs directly into the other major force we talked about.
The immense pressure on the children to win, to be visibly, undeniably successful. How do you build a fortress and shoot for the stars at the same time?
You live in a state of constant low-grade cognitive dissonance. That's how. It's like trying to drive a car with one foot slammed on the accelerator and the other one pressed firmly on the brake.
And what gives? What breaks first?
Well, it's not one big explosion. It's a million small compromises. It's the person who saves 20% of their paycheck religiously into a low-yield savings account. That's the fortress. But then leases a luxury car they can't really afford because they need to look successful when they visit their parents. The appearance of success becomes the compromise.
So the shooting for the stars part gets channeled into visible consumption, not necessarily into wealth-building strategies like, say, angel investing or starting a high-risk, high-reward business.
Starting a business? That would be terrifying for the parents. That's the ultimate gamble. It combines the abstract nature of a stock with the very real possibility of public failure. No, the success has to be legible. It has to be something they can understand and show off to their community. A degree from a prestigious university, a job with a well-known stable company, a house in a good neighborhood. Yes, tangible markers. It's a performance. You're performing a version of the American dream that validates their sacrifice. And the pressure of that performance, it dictates everything. It's why you see brilliant people staying in safe but unfulfilling corporate jobs instead of taking a risk on a startup that could change the world.
Because the psychological cost of failure isn't just personal.
It feels like you'd be invalidating your entire family's history.
You'd be proving their biggest fear right, that the stability they fought so hard to build was fragile after all. It's an impossible weight to carry.
And does that ever breed resentment? This feeling of living a life scripted by someone else's trauma?
Oh, of course, it can. But it's a complicated resentment because it's layered with so much love and gratitude.
You understand why the script exists. You've seen the sacrifices firsthand. So you're angry at the constraints, but you feel immense guilt for even feeling that anger.
It's a cage built of love, in a way. The bars are forged from good intentions and profound sacrifice, but it's still a cage. And that must create such a strange relationship with money, where it's simultaneously a tool for liberation to finally break free and a symbol of your obligation.
It really is. And that core conflict you just described, between liberation and obligation, I wonder if there's even a resolution, or if it's just something you carry. How do you honor the sacrifice that built the cage, while also giving yourself permission to, you know, step outside of it?
I'm not sure the goal is to break out in a destructive way. Maybe it's about changing the terms of your residency.
It's about learning to separate the love that motivated the sacrifice from the trauma that created the financial script.
Say more about that.
That feels important.
Well,
the fortress, the defensiveness, the need for tangible assets, that all comes from a place of fear, deep, legitimate fear. But the reason they built it was out of love for their family. The breakthrough, I think, for the next generation is to say, I will accept the love with profound gratitude. But I do not have to inherit the fear.
Wow. I will accept the love, but I don't have to inherit the fear.
That reframes everything. Because then, honoring the sacrifice isn't about perfectly replicating their financial playbook. It's about taking the security they built for you and using it to live a life with less fear.
A life where you can take a calculated risk, where you can invest in the abstract future because they secured the tangible present for you.
In a way, the most profound tribute to their sacrifice is to build wealth in a way they never could, because they took the bigger initial risk for you.
So the ultimate success isn't just the fancy car or the big house.
It's achieving a sense of psychological and financial freedom, the very thing they lost when they left home. You're not just validating their past, you're healing it in a way.
You're completing the journey. And I think that's the thought I want to leave with.
This entire dynamic, this financial mirage, it's an amplified version of what so many of us go through. We all inherit financial scripts, We all have cages built of love and fear from our family's past. It's a universal story told through a very specific lens. This has been an incredible conversation. Thank you, as always. And to everyone listening, thank you for going on this journey with us. It really has. And perhaps the final question for everyone, immigrant or not, is to look at your own financial habits and ask, which of these are mine and which are an echo from a past I'm trying to honor? The next time you make a financial decision that surprises you, whether it's an impulsive purchase or an overly cautious investment choice, ask yourself, whose voice am I hearing and what childhood memory might be driving this choice? Understanding your money psychology doesn't guarantee better financial decisions, but it's the first step toward making choices based on your current reality rather than your childhood fears and dreams.